We'll call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today we're having a subcommittee of the whole on the University of Alaska's operating budget. This is, today is Monday, March 14th, or the day before the Ides of March. We're in Juneau, Alaska. The time is 1 o'clock. I'm joined today by the Chairman of the Operating Budget, Senator Stedman, Chairman of the Capital Budget, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, and Senator Wilikowski. We expect Senator Von Imhoff and Senator Olson to follow us. In fact, Senator Olson is joining the committee and is 1 minute tardy. Today, we will be hearing an overview from the University of Alaska's FY23 budget request. The presenter today is no longer the acting president, but the university president, Pat Pitney. Please join us at the table and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you for having me. And for the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm president, University of Alaska. I appreciate the time that we have today. The first thing I've been doing since I've been on board is, as president and interim president, was talking about the University of Alaska as the system for public higher education with three universities and the associated community campuses, and the value of having a research university, an open access comprehensive university, and a regional university. And I think that importance of each of our universities and their associated community campuses allows for us to be responsive to the local needs, but also for the state economic needs as a whole. So, don't use the mouse. Another thing I've been trying to do is really focus on financial stability so that we can rebuild the confidence and trust in the university system after the last 8 years. Our focus is on meeting Alaska's workforce needs, competitive research, and operating as cost effectively as possible. The reductions have been very impactful, and you know, I'd like to not have to show these slides, but the reality is over the time period we've lost over 2,400 employees and over 11,000 students, and our number of degree graduates has decreased. Now, this is an impact over the last eight years. State funding has been cut by over $100 million, a third of our base funding. So we're starting from a new starting point, and that's where we are today.
Yes, we have a question from Senator Wilson.
Thank you. President Pitney, do you have the numbers that break this out of the number of full-time students versus part-time students?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm sure I have that in my stack of papers, but I don't have it on the top of my head, so I can get back with you.
Thank you.
Ms. Pitney, everybody at this table is a senator. You said Representative Wilson.
Oh.
Nope.
Sorry.
No problem. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have any sort of data on the loss of students? Is why they left? Is it population decline? Is it lack of course offerings? Is it something else?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. There's many compounding factors. 500 fewer faculty is one, so there's fewer course sections. We have, through the budget reductions, we reduced our program breadth by 50. So when you have fewer programs, you're going to have fewer students by definition. That was compounded by a lower high school graduating class over this time period. It's compounded by an out-migration of working-age adults, 30,000 over that same time period. And then two other things have had tremendous impacts. The veto that happened for fiscal year 19 or fiscal year 20, and the disruption that caused, even though some of it was restored, the disruption at that point was devastating. At the same time that veto happened, you had the the sweep of the higher education fund the first time. So every person on the Alaska Performance Scholarship or the Alaska Education Grant, and there's 5,400 of them, got a letter. That was in fall or in summer of 19. Then you had COVID that happened in the spring of 20. So COVID made a tremendous disruption, and you know, everybody switched over immediately. I mean, well, everybody shut down in the spring. So then again last summer, with the sweep of the higher education fund and the continued budget reductions. So you had all of those compounding factors at the same time. So my goal coming in was the first thing we have to do is create financial stability. And the financial stability is not just at the university, but with the higher education investment fund. And last summer, when it was in question for current fall graduates, we put out a letter that says, for the fall, we're going to figure it out. And fortunately, I really appreciate the support of the legislators I called that said, thank you for doing that and go ahead. We'll figure it out. So and I also thanks to the governor for awarding those scholarships in August. But now it's fixing the higher education fund coming up this session. So either legally or through legislation.
Senator Rilkowski, follow up. Please proceed.
Thank you. So a little bit about our enrollment highlights for this last fall and this spring. So we were still feeling the crunch of higher education fund and COVID. And last fall, we were down another 10%. However, our students enrolled exclusively at community campuses was up a slight amount, which really showed that we had the reopening of our community campuses. In the spring, we saw applications up, we saw admissions up, but overall head count still was on the decline. We're seeing again positive signs for this fall, but has yet to translate to higher enrollment. One thing that's on a very positive side is our graduation rate. Those people who have come in as freshmen and stayed through is higher. So they've been, at least the students we have are very focused. And our Alaska Native student recruitment and retention is also paying off with a retention of our first-time Indigenous students up 4% at UAA and 16% at UAS. I spoke a little bit about our edX courses. This has become quite an innovative approach to get our unique coursework out to the world at large. And edX is a platform for massively online open content. So it's a digital platform that many universities contribute to. And students can take the course for free, and then they pay for their completion credit on it. We've had on the 12 courses that cover things like satellite aperture radar, remote sensing, climate change, One Health, there's been 20,000 learners worldwide. And of those, over 1,000 have paid for completion credits. But more importantly, our graduate student enrollment is up. And we believe very much because this is reaching the niche markets of our strength in research. And so it's quite a success story.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So aside from edX courses, which I'm assuming is online, all online, how much is the university system still conducting online at-home Zoom classes versus in-person classes?
So when COVID, the fall after COVID started, we were at about 80% online, 20% in-person, because there are certain things you cannot have online, welding, chemistry labs, et cetera. Then it has slowly progressed back, and it's different at the different universities. Fairbanks is probably at about 55% on or face-to-face, 45% UAF, 55%, 45%. Anchorage is probably 50 to 60% online, 40% in person, and Southeast is probably right around 50%. We plan for that to come back to the new normal in the fall, which is there's still going to be more online than what we saw before COVID, but not where we are today. So we'll be more face-to-face coming this fall than we are today.
A quick follow-up.
Senator Von Imhoff, follow-up.
So thank you. This is good news that there will be more online, simply because when I am home talking to constituents, folks do call me up and express their frustration about having either the students themselves or the parents of the students, of how the university system is still classes like engineering or math classes are still online, and students they're not enjoying that platform at all, and they're just curious why we can't go back faster and more in person.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, thank you. We are coming back more, and we're hearing it loud and clear from the students. We're also doing more what we call hybrid, so that there's the option for the student to be face-to-face in the classroom, but the flexibility for those that don't want to be on Zoom. But that face-to-face is very important, and more important, we want the vibrancy on our campuses back.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Penny, could you talk about the number of programs that you spoke about, that you had a decline about 50 programs? I think in the fall of 13, you had about 421 plus or minus a few, given in terms of program, certificate programs the universities across the state have. Do you know that number now, of the number of programs, or maybe you can get back to the committee on the number of degree programs and certificate programs the university currently offers to those 20,000 plus students?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we will. The last I remember, the number was 435 down 50, so in the high 300s. So, but I might be off a number or two, so I'll get back with the exact answer.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Pitney, are you having any hiring issues trying to find faculty? Is that a limiting factor as how fast you can come back in the classroom?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the hiring market is difficult, but as you know, we're currently still in a reduction mode. Last year, our budget was down another $4 million after the previous 7 years, down $100 million. So we are in this transition from reduction mode to stability mode. And so although every position that we're recruiting for is more difficult, we're not recruiting for as many because we are still taking advantage of fewer people retiring or resigning to make up our budget difficulties after reorganizations, after program reductions, We're still in the constraint mode, and I say as we lift out of this with the operating budget request, we're going to be in a rebalancing mode. Having said that, we're having significant issues in our health care area. The demand for nurses is high. By definition, our nursing faculty are nurses. They can find jobs anywhere they want, whether it's as nursing faculty or as nurses. And one of our main requests is around recruitment and retention of our health faculty, because we do have vacancies, not due to the budget, but due to their choices in the marketplace, and we need to refill those to have the strength in our nursing programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Pitney, I'd like you to comment on some of the graduate level enrollment that's out there. Has there been a reduction in the master's and PhD students that are out there? But more specifically, what about the WAMI program? Have you had the number of students and graduates, it's been pretty stable? And more importantly, what has the applicants done? Has there been more or less applicants, because that is reflective in the rest of the university as well?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the specific to the WAMI program, the applicants have been fairly consistent, as I understand it, because we maintained the 20 slots. There was this higher education funding certainly has created uncertainty for the WAMI students, because it pays for their out-of-state tuition for the University of Washington component. But that's stayed fairly solid. Our graduate students did decline in the first couple of years after the reductions, but those are building back. And partly they're building back because during this constraint, the research activity at UAF has been able to remain constant, in fact, grow a little bit. And graduate students and PhD students are a big part of the research workforce. And as they have been able to maintain their competitiveness nationally, the funding sources for the graduate students who are working on that have stayed. And so that's been strong. But I think I'd have to get back to you overall what the impact across all graduate students and all PhD students.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions.
President Pitney, you mentioned the need for nurses. And when they graduate, they have jobs. But I think maybe 4 years ago, we were concerned about not enough teachers in the classroom, and we worked out a program to assist the university to get additional dollars to get to concentrate on the education field. Do you recall that, and can you comment on that, and is that part of your stabilization and reconstruction efforts by the board to concentrate on the jobs that are needed in Alaska so that we are producing graduates in the fields that will have jobs available? And is there anything else that this committee can do to help that endeavor?
Yeah. Senator Hoffman, thank you for that. Specific to education, since I've been on board, the board has revamped our Alaska College of Education Consortium so that we're empowering all three of our university schools of education. The more program pathways students have to get an education degree, the more opportunity we have for more teachers. I looked at Montana, for instance. They have 17 different colleges and universities offering education, and there's 13 elementary education pathways in the state of Montana. There's only 900,000 people there, and we had two. So that raising the awareness and level, so we also have worked on a joint marketing campaign called teachalaska.org. Although there was money 1 year, again, funding for the university was down $10 million. But having said that, the board did reallocate into the education program even when the budget reductions were happening. So although 1 year came with additional money, that all of that money was gone the next year, twice as gone the year after that. And so the funding constraint has been real. And again, coming out of this, getting stability and rebalancing is the most important thing.
Thank you for that. Please continue.
So a little bit about our operating budget request. If you focus on the top right, the board has requested $280 million for an operating for its operating budget support and general funds. The governor has $276 million in its budget. $280 million represents $8 million increase, about 3%. That's a very modest increase. Again, I was talking about rebalancing. So this is after the last 3 years, $72 million reduction. $54 million of that is in general fund, and $20 million in tuition and fees. I want to focus a little bit on that unrestricted revenue line of from $535 million down to what is currently $462 million. This unrestricted, that's the money we have for the instruction, facilities, administration, et cetera. That is the money that is largely focused on, you know, day-to-day running. The federal funds are 100% restricted to the purpose that they've come in for. Those are not available for general use. And designated and restricted funds, same way, not available for general use. And like I said, we've been fortunate that our federal funds have continued to increase, and our designated restricted funds are also had been going down, and largely due to COVID money have come back up. But that unrestricted revenue line, that's the money the university has to operate with. The federal and the designated, that's where we are competitive and bringing in other sources of funds.
So can you remind the general public the amount of unrestricted revenues the Senate and the legislature passed in FY21, please?
In 21, $277 million.
No, that's what was actually signed into by the governor. I believe this committee increased that appropriation by approximately $20 million, but that was eventually evaporated. But I just wanted the general public to understand and remind the committee that we acknowledge the importance of the university and what it provides not only to the sites, the main sites of Anchorage and Fairbanks, but to the state of Alaska and this committee's commitment to higher education. So we did increase the request at this table by $20 million last year. Please proceed.
So the $8 million represents a 3% increase off of the 22 budget. We've our key known fixed cost needs are 11.1. Our increase is modest because we're in the rebalancing. The governor's proposal is only 4.1. A little bit about the $8 million. It covers staff salaries, estimated to be $4 million. Facilities maintenance, estimated to be $3.2 million. We had a $2.5 million increase in property tax, and we have other fixed cost increases to $11 million. Our modest So our request at this point does not include our faculty union contracts. So our largest union is contract is in negotiation. That will be forthcoming. But the increases without the faculty union contract is, again, $11 million. We requested $8 million knowing that we're in this rebalancing stage. In addition to the requests for operating, we put forward economic development projects that where our capacity aligned with state needs, aligned with federal opportunities. And so we put forward several different economic development projects, and I'll get into those later. The other thing about our operating budget is we did request a single appropriation, and I know this body has been consistent with a multiple appropriation. When we had a $100 million reduction, it's very difficult to manage in a multiple appropriation, and I continue to request a single appropriation, and if we could get it for 1 year, we could do the rebalancing, and then we could go to a multiple appropriation in an upsizing environment. That would be my request of this body.
Thank you, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Got a couple questions. And I see here you've got some adjustments, you know, and we're concerned from multiple avenues, or multiple agencies, the effect of inflation's having, the coming inflation cycle for FY23, and also the potential fuel cost increase. So if you could inform the committee a little bit about what kind of a cost inflation exposure do you have, and any fuel-based inflation exposure. I know there's a coal-fired plant that heats the university in Fairbanks, and gas most likely in Anchorage, but there's other areas that do have run on oil boilers. So if you could highlight that a little bit. And the reason I ask that, Mr. Chairman, I think we need to consider those potential impacts as we look forward into 23, because it seems like almost every 2-3 weeks we get worse inflationary news coming out of the Southern 48.
Ms. Pitney?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, thank you for that question. This is very modest and is not consistent with inflation. Inflation is substantially higher. The workforce at the University of Alaska has had 1% across the board increase in 5 years. The $4 million that I mentioned about the salary increases for staff represents a 2% increase. You know, double what they've received in the last 5 years, but it in no way meets the inflationary need. If we were to come back with, you know, an inflationary type price, staying at a modest $8 million increase would be significant. And we know, and this was done prior to the significant increases in inflation that we're seeing today. So in a sense, it's dated, but it is our board's request. I would be happy to come back with additional estimates. I know we have some certainty in the coal contracts, but our gas contracts and our diesel contracts that are across the board are significant. And just the environment we are in is significant.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's something we should consider. Years ago, we did a fuel trigger on the Marine Highway when we had high fuel costs impacting us, and that worked out very well as far as having a kind of a fair budget. And I would like to hear from the university, you know, not so much the issue of inflation catch-up from the last several years, but just for the FY23, because the inflation expectations seem to have greatly increased since these budgets were put together in November, October, November, and December. so we don't inadvertently not recognize those trends, Mr. Chairman.
And I would say that the fixed costs that are presented here at $4 million, which was not funded by the governor, these figures are at least 2 months old. So if the committee can get from you what you feel the true costs, university fixed costs are to date and for the projection of FY23, it would be greatly appreciated by this committee. Please proceed.
Thank you. I wish I would have waited for this slide. It's much clearer on what all of those pieces were. So I won't read this slide to you, but that is the fixed cost, but they're underestimated given the inflation for sure. Economic development projects.
Senator Whoops. Bishop.
Just to thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, last bullet. Obviously, that doesn't include deferred maintenance. This is just your day to day. Thank you.
Yeah, the last line is just our day to day, and as our operating budget went down, the amount of operating budget we could put into the day to day facility maintenance was less. And this is just using 22 as the starting point. This would be the increase.
Thank you.
Not trying to catch up.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Please proceed.
So the economic development projects. When we forwarded these projects, knowing about the federal funding, the SLRF funding that was available, where we could take our capacities that were aligned with the state needs and the highest economic development options for the state, and we put forward these projects. So it's the drone program, critical minerals, rare earth element, heavy oil recovery, mariculture, health, and alternative energy. The House has added the health request to the operating budget, and they truly are an operating budget item, but again, trying to be conservative coming in. That original request was on SLRF funding, but it really is an operating budget. The rest of them are very much research projects, but they're multi-year. And this funding would not be all expended in the next year, but over the course of 1.5 to 3 years. And there's some very exciting economic development opportunities on all of these.
Can you expand on the alternative energy $2.5 million? And is any of this related to the micro nuclear program that's being worked on by the university?
So about half of it's related to the micro nuclear, and the other half of it is related to other alternative energy, essentially mapping of alternatives. And there's also work in tidal. There's discussion too around the hydrogen hub that would be additional to this. So but on the alternative energy, about half of it's related to the micronuclear program.
So the concern that I have is that, again, as it was several years ago, we had high costs of energy when the price of oil approached $140. Mm-hmm. And the state of Alaska went into several programs to try to reduce energy costs of Alaskans on a long-term basis. One of them was a weatherization program, which has proven to be one of the most successful programs the state has. So I'm wondering, when this was developed, we did not have the international war that is affecting the price of oil that is going to directly affect the price of energy for Alaskans. Is there anything else that can be considered for us to address the concerns of energy for Alaskans besides just giving them a check for $1,300 and hopefully they will spend it on energy costs. I think this committee did a remarkable thing by addressing the weatherization program, which thousands of Alaskans benefited from for a long-term basis and are still benefiting from that today. I wonder if you could comment upon that.
Thank you for that opening. The Alaska Center for Energy and Power is kind of our lead department on this, and they have several additional avenues that they could pursue, and I'd be happy to get back with you with additional options. Of course, there's outside of the university, the Alaska Energy Authority programs that are out there, which the Alaska Center for Energy and Power has consistently worked closely with. But I would get back with you with additional opportunities because I know there's several. The work in the tidal arena has tremendous opportunity. Then in traditional alternative energy such as solar, wind, and the combination of alternative with traditional and making that the most efficient and expanding our grids, there are many avenues to take, and I think it'd be good to bring ASAP in to pursue some of those, and we get a proposal to you shortly.
Thank you. Senator Wilson.
Mr. Chair, you mentioned that some of this is the federal funds. Do you see any additional federal funding or additional dollars coming in for any of these projects in the next infrastructure project or any match funds that the university may need to ask the legislature for more in terms of match funding, or do you feel that this is significant to get these programs up and going?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, these are proposed on the state discretionary funds, and to the degree that we can gain capacity and build, because each of these has several partners involved, to the degree that we have partners, we could use this money to leverage additional competitive grants. If there were an amount of money for research match that was available, there are some programs we could go after that we don't have the ability to right now, but they come up as competitive programs come forward. So we have six of them right now that we don't have match for. But if there was a pool of match, we may very well be able to compete for things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson? Thank you. Please proceed. Oh, Senator Bishop.
Briefly, thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Pitney, could you expound on the health 3.75? I think I know what it's for, but you want to just touch on that for a second?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I'm going to zip down to the very end of the presentation here.
Oh, because that's fine. We can wait till we get
there. That's okay. We can, because I can zip right back to it. So the lion's share of the request is for the salary and benefits. And I wouldn't say it's for new faculty hires. It's for the faculty we are hiring. Many of those are replacing vacancies. So this isn't like capacity for new people. It's where we have vacancies, we need the salary and benefits to be able to attract them, because the market is so different today for nursing faculty than there were before. And then the next piece, so the first line is the 1.8, that's for specifically for nursing faculty. The 1.7 million is to actually add faculty in these very high demand fields to essentially put more, add capacity in our classrooms for particular items that are of high demand. And then there's a small amount for simulation, mannequins and other technology for simulation. so that we reduce the amount of time that they have to have in the, they can do their clinical setting, more of their clinical setting on campus rather than in clinics. And one of our biggest barriers is enough clinical time. So.
Follow up,
Senator Bishop.
So I'm just, it appears to me that the university is responding to the 6,500 person need in the healthcare industry going forward.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes. And with all of the reductions, the College of Health has been the one that's been preserved the most through these reductions. And it is our highest demand area and continue to be our priority.
Please proceed.
Okay, the next item is our capital budget request. The facilities deferred maintenance and renewal should not be a surprise. $50 million has been our annual request for deferred maintenance since I was the system office's budget director, which the last year was in 2008. If the university received $50 million in deferred maintenance on an annual basis, we wouldn't grow our deferred maintenance. Our annual depreciation on our facilities is about $65 million a year. But the $50 million allows us to keep up for a period of time. The university was receiving about $35 million a year annually. Through that time, you can see on this graph, in that time from 2007 to 2014, we were able to keep our deferred maintenance backlog about steady. And that from 2007 until 2015. And then it's been consistently rising. So the red line is our deferred maintenance backlog. The dark blue line is the amount of funding towards our deferred maintenance backlog. From the state is the dark blue line, and the light blue line was what we bonded for, which added to our debt service.
Any questions on that slide? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think kind of a nice little pictorial here. I would expect if we took a look at the general deferred maintenance around the state outside the university, we'd see a very similar line in the advancement of the backlog of deferred maintenance. And I think, as I recall, if we go back to about 2006 or so, some of us were at the table and we had a revenue increase due to the increasing price of oil, and we spent a significant effort in the first few years of that cycle on deferred maintenance. And the reason I bring that up, Mr. Chairman, is we've seen this before, and you know, almost 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and I think we need to address the deferred maintenance issue in this cycle of you know, extra revenue through the increase in oil prices, because it's just going to get worse if we don't. And it seems like you always regress to the mean, and when you underfund something for several years, it comes back and bites you, and you have to get caught back up again.
Just for the members at this table and for the general audience, in FY12, that blue line that the legislature backfunded in deferred maintenance was chaired by Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
So the other capital project that we brought forward is our forward-facing student IT system. So that student IT system was put in 1994, 1995. I was actually the manager of the computer programmers at the time when we put in the current student IT system. It desperately needs modernization. It was loud and clear before COVID. It became louder and clearer during COVID that we have to modernize our student-facing IT. That $20 million is in the governor's budget. It is on a set of federal funds, and I'm just drawing a blank on the type of funding it is. The funding requires Treasury approval. We have worked with the Office of Management and Budget to send in the proposal to see if it's going to have Treasury approval. It is not a slam dunk. My request there would be to go ahead and leave it on the federal funds that it is, but put contingency language that it either uses SLRF funding, which is discretionary, or uses general fund to backfill in the event that the Treasury comes back with a finding that it's not eligible for the particular source that it's on. And then that economic development one we just covered in the previous slide.
So. Thank you. Please proceed.
A little bit about our deferred maintenance priorities. So the only deferred maintenance priority is in a piece of legislation at this point in time is the $18 million for the Bartlett-Moore Hall modernization that's been top priority for the last 4 years. And our deferred maintenance, that's only 18 of the $50 million priority projects. And in terms of deferred maintenance, although we've only submitted a request of $50 million, we have prioritized our projects to at least $150 million, and if I could go back and check, potentially $300 million. So we have prioritized deferred maintenance projects to at least $150 million that I know, that I've seen my list on. And so that, but this is what currently is in the legislation at this time in the capital budget. The student system is the coronavirus capital projects fund. That was the exact federal federal funding category that it's in. This the last item is Seward Marine Center research vessel infrastructure. This is very exciting. So, University of Alaska Fairbanks manages and operates the research vessel Sikulyak. It's homeported in Seward. It is roughly on average a $15 to $16 million annual operating, completely competitively funded. The National Science Foundation is in one of their final reviews to invest $95 million in Seward for the shoreside and dock facilities for that vessel. And so that's very exciting. And we may see the kind of a long-term arrangement with National Science Foundation with research vessels. So this is a very exciting one, completely federal funded.
Senator Bishop, then Senator Wilson.
Just a comment, we funded this last year for Bartlett-Moore Hall modernization, and it didn't survive the veto pen, but the legislature did fund it last year. And I'd just like to follow up and say that the Sikulyak did make a Tom Clancy novel, the latest one, so I just wondered if you got a cut of the book.
Thank you for those comments, Senator Wilson, then Senator Stedman.
Yes, thank you.
Director Penny, so is the university then in support of the GEO bond, or are you advocating for a different source of funding for the $18.7 million?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I would advocate for any avenue to get deferred maintenance funded. And there's some rationale for GEO bonds. There's other rationale for straight up funding, whether it be general fund or whether it be federal funds. The biggest, my advocacy is for sufficient and regular deferred maintenance funding.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I recall, this was put in by the administration last year, the governor. It wasn't added by the legislature, and it was vetoed by the governor. So this here request, now it's back before us the second time from the administration with a request that we issue debt to modernize this building. And Mr. Chairman, I would advocate that we don't use debt to modernize this building, that we fund it with general funds, straight up fund it, and save our bonding capacity in the future when we need it. But we have the financial resources currently to not go out and mortgage the future of our children on issues like this, but to pay cash. So I would advocate that the chairman of the capital budget look at Bartlett Hall and Moore Hall and put it in the capital budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Please proceed, President Pitney.
So this is a little bit of additional information on our student information technology system. We also have the full project proposal that we've sent to Treasury. If there's interest in that full project proposal by anybody, we'd be happy to share it.
Mr. Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point, President Pitney, so you wrote the proposal, and then you submitted it to OMB, and then they submitted it on your behalf, or did you go direct to Treasury?
So through the chair, Senator Bishop, this is a state similar to the SLRF funds. This is an amount of money that it was $112 million, and I refer to it as broadband money, but it is capital project. It's titled capital project money. There are guidelines within Treasury, but it's an amount allocated to the state. So we submitted it through OMB to Treasury.
Thank you.
And on your second bullet point, you're saying it's going to serve the entire university. Does that include the remote sites as well?
Yeah. So I'm trying to work very hard on language, and so it serves the entire university system, which consists of our three universities and their community campuses. So I apologize. I did not have the clarity there that I am working very hard to have.
Thank you for that. Please proceed.
So among the $50 million, deferred maintenance request, these are the top five priorities. And for the most part, the legislature passed these five priorities last year, slightly different five priorities last year for $31 million, which was vetoed. But this is the top five priorities for the 23. And you can see that the Fairbanks, Moore and Bartlett Hall repairs, the total is $20 million, and that's just because of price escalation in the last couple of years. And then here's the remaining of the $50 million. And again, if there were more than $50 million in deferred maintenance, if we wanted to address more of the backlog, we have this prioritization up to $150 million available. Wanted to talk a little bit about, unless there's questions. Any questions?
Nope. Please proceed. Okay, Senator Wilson.
So I just want to, just a point of clarification here. So your first one here on the Bartlett Moore, the 20, that's outside of the 18, or is that included in that 18 sort of million, depending on how that's funded?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, it's the total project cost. Only 18 is included in the GO bond. And partly it was cost escalation, partly it's some of it wouldn't be available, wouldn't be eligible for a GO bond.
And just
Senator Wilson.
And just then, if it sounds like there's support maybe on this table or in this body to go ahead and fund that one way or the other. Would you be able to give us the additional list of what the additional $20 million would cover in terms of projects if that's funded outside of this $50 million?
President Pitney?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, so this is the top five priorities. That's $33 million of the $50 million. And this list is the remaining $17 million of the $50
million. Senator Wilson.
I guess I'm asking for an additional list that would continue on for additional $20 million.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, if you're asking what is our top $70 million in priorities, we could have that to you this afternoon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the question.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, and if Senator Wilson does not see Southeast campuses in that first 70, I'd recommend he make an additional request for added dollars, because I don't see Southeast communities on there. And I recognize, you know, the ranking order, and don't begrudge the other bigger university campuses getting all the cake, but I just thought I'd put that on the table for Senator Wilson for consideration.
Kuskokwim River campuses come to mind. Please proceed.
The community could use that.
So in the February board meeting, February 24th, the Board of Regents passed strategic guidance. We called it our goals and measures. And it's under a stability scenario. And it's creating financial stability from assuming financial stability from where we are today. Our five goals, and Senator Hoffman, to your point, the first of the five goals is to contribute to Alaska's economic development for skilled workforce, and specifically when we're measuring, it's in high demand job areas. Fostering academic excellence for student success, our diversity, equity, inclusion, and that's very much so our Alaska Native Success Initiative, growing our world-class research and operating cost-effectively. In addition to those broad goals, we've focused on key priority areas, and this needs a particular update. It's increased student enrollment in programs leading to jobs. Is one of our biggest priority areas, developing workforce and focused economic development initiatives. That's reflected very much in our drone program, the heavy oil, the mariculture, health, et cetera, those initiatives. Promoting Arctic policy and research and leadership. You know, there was a tremendous effort by this body several years ago to be active in Arctic policy and leadership for our state. And as the Arctic continues to open, our future is going to be so linked with the rest of the Arctic. And I think the leadership of the Arctic needs to be from people in our state. And that means we've got to create the leaders for the state. We are fortunate that UAF is the highest cited university for Arctic research in the nation, second in the world. So our position is strong there. We need to maintain that position, and we need to build our policy and leadership position. And that's not just through the university, but through partnerships with state agencies and partnerships with our Native corporations and other businesses, because we collectively need to position ourselves for leadership in the Arctic. It's gonna come. How does Alaska position to take the most advantage of it?
Senator Bishop.
Just a comment. I just want to highlight the $5 million for heavy oil research. For those listening at home, everybody knows where we're at in the world right now with energy independence, and for those that don't know at home, we have a formation called the Ugnew Formation on the North Slope. There's 22 billion barrels of oil in there. And I think it's very timely that you have this $5 million add here to your research budget to help unlock that heavy oil for our nation's security.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Please continue.
So the next item, and these aren't necessarily in priority order, except for enrollment. That one's a priority. That's the highest priority of all of these because that's the key factor. But the next priority item is strengthening our teacher education through our College of Education Consortium. Our Alaska Native Success Initiative, we want faculty, staff, and student populations at the university to be reflective of that in Alaska's population. And the Alaska Native Success Initiative, as you look at our targets, has really shown across the board how the university's working, universities are working to expand our student population, but our faculty, and in doing so, bringing our faculty and staff population up as well. And our most aggressive targets are in this Alaska Native Success Initiative area. The building finance industry partnerships to expand business workforce. In Alaska, we make more money on our money on a per capita basis than any state out there. You look at our permanent fund, you look at our retirement funds, you look at every community foundation, you look at the University of Alaska Foundation, our land grant trust fund, the mental health trust. Building our finance capacity in our state, managing that money, having finance expertise, but also financial literacy across the board in our state is significantly important. As we started talking with our industry partners, we learned that, yeah, having finance people would be great, but we need HR people, we need accountants, we need business analysts, we need management information specialists, we need, they're really focused on workforce. And so as we refine this one, expect to see some real concrete proposals coming forward over the course of the next year. There's just a pressing need, but also a willingness to partner, and so very, very excited about that. Increasing the fisheries and ocean sciences presence in Southeast, looking at the University of Alaska Southeast campus, looking at their oceanography program, coupled with the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences presence at Lena Point, and the mariculture industry potential. There's a real opportunity to expand that presence here in Southeast and capitalize on the facilities and the location we have here, and so that one's out there. And the last item is revising our business models and building efficiencies and modernizations. Our student IT system right there is the biggest, highest priority, but there's several other priorities going on in that. So this is what I view as the marching orders for the university system, each of the universities going forward, and I appreciate the board passed them as our strategic guidance. The rest of this presentation is about our targets for the coming 5 years, and these are assuming a very modest growth, not huge investments. This is under a 3% scenario, but enrollment, number of graduates, retention, capture rate of our UA scholars, dual enrollment programs. One of our most aggressive targets is our dual enrollment program. 56% of students who are in who complete a dual enrollment program come to the university, and we're at 2,100 dual enrollment students today. Our goal is to get to 3,600 by 2027, and that is the biggest pipeline, successful pipeline through college that for the state, but it also accelerates everything. A student could graduate with a baccalaureate degree in as little as 2 years, and a master's degree in 4 years.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Penny, on the either with the dual enrollment program or just the straight transfer from high school graduate to college, have you seen a decrease in the number of remedial classes that students will have to take? I remember a few years ago, I guess maybe it was my freshman year, we were given lots of data and data points on how many students, and it was alarmingly high upon the number of remedial classes that a college freshman were taking in the university. And have you seen a decrease in the number of remedial classes, so like the 09 in English and math that have been taken?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, in terms of the dual enrollment, the remedial is not the issue. In terms of remedial in general, it has been on the decline more, not because some students don't come in somewhat behind, but because the way students progress successfully is not by taking remedial, but by taking the normal with catch-up support. And so there's been more of a move to try to put people in a normal class, but have the backup so that they have the ability to catch up while they're taking that class. And there's also some financial aid implications of having to take remedial. And so this way there's not the financial aid impact, and more students are successful in that extra support to catch up. The, you know, it'll be interesting as we come out of COVID, what that catch up is going to be, and it's certainly what people are looking into. So.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Further questions on this slide? Yeah. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So you're talking about, you know, student enrollment and trying to increase that that aspect as being your number one priority. Does the university target large conventions, both in-state and out-of-state, to attract students? And I'll give you an example. So the Oshkosh Air Show, it's been on a bucket list of mine. We finally went this past year. I mean, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. And there's a college row, and there were colleges, Emory Riddle, North Dakota, there was no University of Alaska. And this is thousands of families of students, young and college age, that are interested in aviation. And I would think that the University of Alaska should have this big booth that shows all the opportunities to have in Alaska. Come to UAA or UAF, learn how to fly an airplane, and then you can fly all over Alaska. I mean, it wasn't there, and it was a big hole.
President Pitney.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, thank you for that. And there are several different kind of target markets that the universities are in, depending on their programs. There is, the lion's share of what we do for marketing is focused on in-state students, but there are key markets where out-of-state students are very important. And, you know, outdoor recreation is an example that I know of, just because my son was involved in it, where they go to several different events that are in the outdoor rec space. The work within, for instance, the kind of Los Angeles area, targeting 2-year schools, because we have more space in some of our upper division courses than our lower division courses, so we're targeting for the niches to make it most advantageous. When we saw the budget reductions that we saw, it's harder to do some of the one-offs. But as we focus on enrollment and look at ways to expand that, we'll keep that one in mind, given that aviation is one of our priority programs.
Thank you, Senator Sidman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got a two-part question. President Pitney, did you graduate from high school in Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I did not. I graduated from a school in Montana.
Okay, we're not going to hold that against her, but I just, for those watching, you know, we've got five high school, Alaska high school graduates here at this table. And I was hoping you'd be one of them and make it six to two, but it's 5-3, so. I just, you know, just for those watching, if there's younger Alaskans watching, it's sometimes it's hard, you know, when you're younger to see the opportunities in front of you. And it's, you know, it's difficult, especially from rural Alaska, to get that kind of message to the young Alaskans to get higher education. And it's, you know, Anchorage is a long ways away if you're from southeast, and if you're from most areas in southeast, Juneau's a long ways away, and you even go down to Prince of Wales, Ketchikan's a long ways away. So it's all in scale. So anyway, I just was thinking about that when we were looking at these statistics here of the, you know, top 10% of high school graduates. And I know there was at least one of the five of us at this table was in the top 10% of their high school graduates, and I won't let her confess, and I won't ask the other ones their placement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Further questions on this slide? Seeing none, please proceed.
So this is another set of our targets, focused also on earned revenue, philanthropy, and student debt. We are among the lowest in the percent of students graduating with debt and the amount that they graduate with debt, but it still is a barrier that we want to continue to be conscientious about. And here's the diversity.
We have a statistic. Question on the last slide.
And Mr. Chair, what's that?
Senator Wilson?
This slide, I have a question.
Okay. On 22?
Yeah, I'll wait for
it. Well, proceed with your question.
I'm just going to ask just a definition clarifying on the in your indigenous heritage and your other underrepresented heritage question.
So through the chair, Senator Wilson, it's Alaska Native versus all minority groups. And where I was saying, in the fall, the board passed our Alaska Native Success Initiative. And these targets, our 2027 targets, are very aggressive because of all the work we did on that plan, and bringing our graduation rate for Alaska Natives from our current average of 18.7 to 24.2, that puts us above national average significantly. The bringing our Alaska Native so the indigenous heritage from 15% to 23% of our student population is significant and actually exceeds our state population. And focusing on raising our faculty, both of underrepresented in general and Alaska Native.
Mr. Chair, just a
Senator Wilson.
Just a follow-up question then. I'm sure it's more of an omission than the university doesn't care about the underrepresented heritage of other students. Was that just an omission off the slide? Or do you not track that data?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, yes, we do track the data. And I don't know if it's an omission off. It is an omission off of the slide because I know we track it.
Thank you. If
Senator Wilson.
If we can get that data, that would be important.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Please proceed. Any additional questions on this slide? Next slide.
Under that, what I call the stability scenario, just a consistent 3% increase in state general funds, assuming that was kind of close to inflation, what would 10 years of stability provide in differences in our operating revenue baseline? So in fiscal year 19, our state general fund made up almost 44% of our total revenue. It's now down to 38%. Under stability standpoint, we could maintain that 38% and grow the other revenue areas. If you look in FY22 and FY23, you can see the brighter green line. That's our student tuition and fees. Due to the cuts in the base, it has much higher impact on our tuition, thus our enrollment, than it does on our research. And so now research has picked up a much larger share of the total. Over the timeline, under stability, we can regain our tuition and fees, i.e. our enrollment, back to probably never back to where we were, but more to it contributing a percent of our operating budget going forward. If you notice, all the way out in fiscal year 32, under 3% scenario, we would not, the state general fund is $364 million. That is below the general fund support that the state provided the university in 2014. So we really are a different sized institution, but our focus remains on the highest demand jobs in the state. Happy to take any questions.
Questions on this slide? Seeing none, please proceed.
I had one.
Okay, Senator Bishop.
Yeah. President Pitney, I'm not quite sure I'm going to ask my question, but it'd be neat to see this slide restated with the deferred maintenance and what the deferred maintenance is now and what the deferred maintenance is in 32 with this funding. I know it's going to be an increase. It should be. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see it, restated, if you could do that.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I'd be happy to do that, and I will say that the stability scenario should be $50 million a year, and then it would be stable. With no dollars a year or the incremental 2 or 1 or 5, it would be significant, as we've gone up almost $400 million in the last 8 years.
That $50 million was $50 million in deferred maintenance every year.
Deferred maintenance capital annually.
Further questions? That completes the questions section. That completes our...
These were just slides for me so that I remembered what to say.
Okay. Are there any closing questions that any of the members may have? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Pitney, I guess the thing that shook me when I heard this was the greater than 20-year-old IT system that you have up there, which is probably being used by students that are quite a bit younger than that as well. And so because of that, it's troubling that we don't have or haven't had the ability to go ahead and approve your request for this IT upgrade. Are you pretty optimistic that it's going to be happening this time? Because I think it's an absolute must in order for the university to just continue on at the level that they have been over the last decades since when we were students.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, thank you for that. It is very important, and my interest is that $20 million is funded. I'm not necessarily... I don't mind which fund source it is, but because the current fund source, that federal capital coronavirus capital project fund, is not a slam dunk, it's in question. Having contingency language that this would be funded, if that doesn't materialize, that it's funded with general fund, is an absolute high priority.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Further questions, closing questions. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President, I know this is a small amount, but it's a large issue in my district and probably the center to my left in terms of the university ending the Future Farmers grant. But in the map. So you have the land use, you know, grant there for the farm, and just wondering to know how the university will hopefully work with DNR in terms of a transfer of that funding of the grant, or is that something you guys are looking toward to doing? You know, we really care about those 4-H kids and the future farmers kids being able to still use those lands and still be able to have a productive program. Just wondering how that transition is going to go, or how that will work in terms of those granting opportunities.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, thank you. The 4-H program is different than the Future Farmers of America program. The Future Farmers of America program is the one that we're proposing to transfer over to the Division of Agriculture. It was actually for years in Department of Education. It came to the university. Subsequently, the university was reduced by $105 million. For the future of the program, we believe it's best served under the Division of Agriculture. We have reached out to DNR. Several people have reached out to DNR to do that, and we've put funding towards it to transition it this year.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Any additional closing questions? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just more of a comment. You know, when we went through these budget reductions the last few years, the most significant reductions were at the university level and the Marine Highway level. And they were, those reductions were netted out with increases in other departments. So we basically were net zero for all practical purposes. We've gone through this, or we're going through this process of transferring the financial responsibility of the Marine Highway system to the federal government, with the new legislation passed in Washington, and we'll work through that issue the next couple of years. So it looks like that issue or the Marine Highway has got the positive ability now to stabilize itself and continue to be in existence. And my concern here, dealing with the university, that we get it stabilized, that we don't let the university continue to erode and end up, you know, with a dysfunctional university. So I'm encouraged and looking forward to the responses back from President Pitney on the inflation proof issue or inflation impact that the university is going to be walking into in FY23 that hasn't been accounted for yet in the budget submissions due to the timing. But I was wondering if he's got a red book sitting there at the table, if she could explain to the public what that is, where they can look at that information, and is there anything in that document that you may want to mention that you haven't mentioned today to the committee while we're still, as a committee of the whole, working on the budget process?
Ms. Pitney.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Stedman. So the red book, as we so fondly call it, is the University of Alaska Board of Regents budget request to the legislature. And it's been, there's the Board of Regents request, then there's the governor's budget. This represents the Board of Regents request. And it goes through and provides tremendous information about each of the programs we're requesting. It goes through our capital funding requests, but it also has a lot of historical information about prior year requests or decrements. A more full picture about the university's budget and their needs. And I appreciate that it's a red book again. In the past several years, it hasn't been read, and so we proudly present the Board of Regents budget in the Red Book. But we covered almost all of it in the presentation here, so thank you.
I don't know where the concept of a Red Book comes from, but red means deficit. Maybe it should be a green for growth.
Thank you. Keep that in mind.
President, is there any additional questions by members before I give the last word to the president? President Pitney, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Chair Hoffman, and I'm not going to talk about from a budget perspective, but more, number one, thank you to this committee for the support of the university. And number two, that for Alaska, our biggest competitor is not students going out of state for college. It's our students not going to college. And when I talk about college, I don't talk about just a four-year degree. We have several 1 and 2 year degrees that provide amazing wages. Just the average difference between a high school education and a 2 year degree is $10,000 a year, every year for the rest of your life. A 4 year degree is $20,000 more in earnings every year for the rest of your life. For a graduate degree, it's $40,000 more every year for the rest of your life. That sense of education pays. And I'm asking all the leaders to help us convince people that taking a path to education, whether it's a 1 year degree program, a 2 year degree program, or a 4 year degree program, it is better for our state, but it's better for each and every person. So education is a good thing. And I appreciate that.
Thank you. And in my closing comments, I would just request from the university on the growth for jobs that have high rate of employment, that being health and education, if you can relook at those and come forward with some specifics and try to get them monetized for this committee to consider. I think it is something that we support higher education, but the higher education needs teachers to graduate in order to fill the jobs that we have throughout the state of Alaska. They're so numerous, and seems to be dependent upon hiring teachers from the lower 48, which has not been very successful. Thank you, and we are adjourned at 2:30, and we are adjourning till 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.